Good Friday afternoon and welcome to Eagle FM. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuned in from. It's Friday and you know that what we do at the beginning of what would be home run on the regular day of the week, and that is, of course, we turn each other line radio program. And that is, you have in the studio today, I have, they are not new. They were new at some point, but today they are not new. And I think it's safe to call them, veterans at this point. But if you are joining us online, online, that is via the website and via the app, and now we are live streaming on Facebook. You should be looking at my guest for this for today's Friday. Today's discussion here on We Turn Each Other Line radio program is inclusion, stereotypes, and myths. And presenting the topic are Helena and Michaela. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
All good. And welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So I will not waste your time. I will just pass the ball to you guys to walk us through what you brought for us today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of We Turn Each Other Line radio program. And I'm Helena, and I'm with
Michaela. And I'm Michaela. We are so happy to have you guys today with a comfortable greeting. Turn up the volume and get ready. Learn and have a great time with us. I greet everyone back then at Uitani Radio Station, Elizabeth, our radio coordinator, and Naledi, her assistant. I give it all to Helena to tell us what our deep sense of humanity is within this topic and why we want to talk about this thing as youth. So, Helena, what do you have for us there?
So today we are going to talk about something very much important, and it's all going to be about inclusion, stereotypes, and myths. Was Michaela correct?
Yes, Helena, you are right. We'll be talking about how we can make our schools and communities welcome places where everyone feels respected, valued, and included. Did you guys hear that? Respected, valued, and included.
And it's, what if I say again? Inclusion, stereotypes, and myths. So, later we'll be breaking some common stereotypes and myths, especially those surrounding people with disabilities in Namibia. And of course, not only Namibia, everywhere wherever you're listening to, but yeah, people with disabilities.
But before we start ahead, we'll get a short music break, which is a jingle from Eagle FM.
All right, you just leave all the jingles for me. And on the other side of the break, we're going to be diving into stereotypes and myths. Okay. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know about you, but I am surely looking forward to it. Let's go for a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, Om Prikini. Oh, Om Prikini.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o speciala ngeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and we continue where we left off. And when you are, if you just tuned in, you are listening to Witani Child Line radio program. And just remember where we left off was myth. And ladies, help me out here. It's myths and?
Stereotypes.
Myths and stereotypes.
And inclusion.
Myths, stereotypes, and inclusion. Yes. Okay, I mean, you're the bosses here. You take it away.
So
inclusion in schools and communities. Miguela, let's start with a simple question. What does the word inclusion really mean?
Really, guys? Inclusion means making sure that everyone has the opportunity to participate, belong, and be treated fairly regardless of their differences.
Exactly. People are different in many ways. Some people may have disabilities, speak different languages, have different abilities, or come from different backgrounds. This is what we see every day. See?
Yeah, but being different does not mean someone should be left out. Is that true, Elena?
Imagine you are at school and your classmates are choosing teams for a game. Instead of saying you can't play because you have a disability, we can ask, how can we change the game so everyone can participate?
But that's really inclusion. So you are it's basically asking someone like, are you going to partake in this, instead of telling the person, no, you can't. That basically, because of the disability, we should not look at other people less than because of what they have, but we should include them to make them feel like they are safe, even at home, based in their communities, or even at schools. Because we are practicing this in daily lives, and we are also raising a generation together. So we should know how to include each other and let us let each other feel safe and welcome everywhere we go. So Helena, what do you have to for us there?
So do you know schools can become inclusive in many ways?
Yeah,
you know.
We can invite everyone to participate, help classmates when they need support, listen to one another, and make sure nobody is bullied or deliberately excluded. As I told you guys before, we should not let each other feel uncomfortable or less than. So
because of the disabilities, no, we must include everyone. You must choose the games wisely, whereby if it's running, we cannot run. We must either play cards, whereby everyone can play cards. See, teachers and learners can also find a way to make activities accessible to people with different needs.
Yeah, and remember, helping someone doesn't mean treating them as less capable as they are.
Exactly. We should ask before helping someone. You can simply say, would you like some help? And then you see the person will...
Yeah, that's basically including the person. Isn't only important at school, it is also important in our communities.
Community activities should give everyone a chance to participate. You see, when the kids are playing in the communities, there's a playground in the community, but it's only having,
something that is based on kids that have legs.
And everything, but not the hands.
It's true. We can include people by inviting them to games, conversations, clubs, sports, and other activities.
Most importantly, we should never make someone feel like they don't belong to a community or to a school, or they are just not included. Inclusion is needed at every point in life.
Yeah. Here's a question for everyone listening. What is the one thing you can do this week to make someone feel included?
Just think about it and just, you see, answer yourself. Just help the community, help someone out so they don't feel excluded. Maybe you can invite someone to join your group, sit with someone who is alone, help a classmate, or simply say, hello, can you have something to do fun? Yeah,
even though we know that there are some schools that are done writing this week and they are closing, by next time when you get back to school, make someone feel comfortable. Let it be something that is productive in your life so that you can also feel like you made someone really feel comfortable in a way that you are bringing forth a better fundamental to someone else's life to make them feel happier and safer at school, even though they feel less than at home. So, Helena?
Not only in school, it can also be at work. You see, even people get me in this girl of family, is that one person without an arm? Then they'll be like, no, you cannot touch the mic. People won't allow the person to touch the mic, to use the mic because it doesn't have the arm.
Yeah.
But not only in school, schools, also at workplaces.
At the communities as well.
Communities and everything.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So remember, small acts of kindness can make a big difference.
A very big difference.
Yeah. Because
inclusion is very important. You must include everyone in whatever you're going to do. It's important. It's needed, you see, in our daily lives.
Yeah. So our next session, we'll get a jingle from Girl FM, and then we start off with our next session, which is Breaking Stereotypes and Myths.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh?
Breaking stereotypes. Go.
And moves.
Oh, so it's breaking stereotypes and myths.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and now it's time for our second session, breaking stereotypes and myths.
But first, what's a stereotype?
So, Michaela, I think a stereotype, I don't think generally a stereotype is general belief or assumption that people in a particular group are all the same.
And stereotypes can be harmful. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Because they can make people feel judged, misunderstood, or excluded.
Ooh. Can you play a game just a small one?
Yeah, maybe.
Myth or fact? You start.
Yeah. Myth number one. People with disabilities cannot do things for themselves. Is it true, Helena?
Myth.
It's a myth.
Yeah.
So,
very big one.
People with disabilities can learn, work, create, participate in sports, make decisions, and achieve their goals. Everyone has different strengths and abilities. As you said, that's, Mauritius, the question I really asked was a myth. And I answered it forth in a way that people with disabilities can work, create, and participate in sports and do everything they really need to do.
Yeah. So, myth number two, a person with a disability always needs someone to help them. Myth or fact?
That's a myth.
A very big
That's
one.
Really a myth.
Some people may need support with certain things while others may not. The best thing to do is to ask instead of assuming. So you should always ask, do you need? Yeah, you cannot just assume. No, she cannot do this. No, you must ask first.
Yeah, and here's another one. People with disabilities cannot be successful.
Another big myth, a very big one that us bamboos believe in. Not really bamboos.
No.
But bamboos, yes. Especially Elena. Bamboos.
A disability does not determine someone's dream, talents, intelligence, or future.
Exactly.
So, Helena?
But in our community, my dear, if you have a disability, those people assume that you cannot do anything. They won't even send you to school. I'm telling you, stay in the house the whole time.
Yeah, but
I've seen that before.
I have one saying that says, no matter how tough the circumstance is, you are able to make it. Do not walk onto what other people are telling you, but walk onto the fundamental that you are really going to achieve that thing. Because it cannot be that you're having a disability, but you cannot be successful. That's really a myth.
There is no way you can be successful. People are not sending you to school already. How do they expect this girl to be successful now if they already told her to sit down home the whole day?
And this is a really true teaching that people should hear this so that they can bring forth a better aspect for kids that are struggling with or kids that have disabilities.
More schools for disabilities.
Yeah.
Schools, you see, disabled schools.
Mm-hmm.
Respectful language. Words matter too, do you know?
Yeah, we should never use insulting names or jokes about someone's disability.
And we should never laugh at someone because they look or speak or move or communicate differently. It's nature, guys.
Yeah, instead of that, let's focus on the person, their personality, talents and dreams and abilities. Look forth to the person. What can the person achieve? What will the person do? Do not look on the outward appearance because you do not know what the inner man of the person is. That person is maybe brought forth with that disability to achieve something greater than what you ever expected. So, Helena, what's going to be our next?
Inclusion challenge of the week. So, it's time for our inclusion challenge.
This week, we challenge every listener to do these three things.
Number one, include someone who may feel left out in your community.
Number two, challenge a stereotype when you hear one.
And number three, treat everyone with respect and kindness.
You don't have to do something huge to make a difference.
Sometimes a smile, an invitation, a kind word, or simply listening can make someone feel that they belong
they really
in this community.
Yeah. So, what is this? Maybe we might get a jingle and then we come to
close off our program.
No, it's not yet time to close off because we still got like 12 minutes. So we can just add up something and then we'll do the close-up remarks maybe at a little bit later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are 19 minutes into the hour of four. Okay. If you just tuned in, don't, you know, and you feel lost, why am I not listening to Home Run? In case you haven't listened, you know, to Home Run on Fridays in a while, Fridays from four, we start off with the Itani Childline Radio program. And, you know, before we dive into other programs. So that means we are still on the Itani Childline Radio program. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll continue on the other side. And in the studio, joining or more like educating us on this topic for today. On stereotypes, inclusion, I swear. Stereotype inclusion and myths. That's with Helena and Michaela. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back to Witani Childline Radio Program Michaela and, which name am I missing? Helena and Michaela on inclusion, stereotypes, and myth. So, you know, one of my favorite quote is from Albert Einstein, who said, everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, then that fish is going to live its entire life thinking it's not good enough. So that's, you know, a quote is more often brought up in a reference to motivate people on their strength. Don't mock them on their weaknesses. Which I think, you know, resonates with your topic, ladies, for today. But, you know, let me just leave this to the experts.
Experts.
Yeah.
Guys, you heard we are experts. Why, Helena? We have learned so much today.
Yes, we have learned. In fact, it's not as a learn.
We are teaching you guys.
You guys have learned that inclusion means making sure everyone has the opportunity to participate and feel that they belong to the community. In fact, they belong to Namibia.
Yeah.
The motherland.
Namibia, one nation. Yeah. And we learned that. Not one nation, but we also include other people all around the country. So, and we have learned that stereotypes and myths can hurt people and prevent us from seeing what people through disabilities are. Abilities.
So let's always remember, different does not mean less.
Yeah, everyone deserves respect.
Kindness
and dignity and a chance to belong. Like we all belong in one country as we raise a better generation.
And before we say goodbye, I would like to take a very special moment to thank the organization and partners who support the Witani Childline radio program.
Yeah, but before we thank them, what can we tell the kids that are out there with disabilities? What can we really encourage those kids?
So, guys, you guys are not left out. Like, we are one. We just need to stop some of these games, actually, where the games that don't include everyone. But now, I think I've seen people with disabled people running. I think making a race. I've seen that. I think now,
especially in the other countries, but we also do have people that are talented in Namibia that bring forth that talent out, but we should identify our talents and learn to stand up for ourselves. We should not look forth on what other people says to us, but we should stand up with our confidence to make it all, even if we do not have that kind of a...
Tell them you can do this.
Yeah, you can actually do it.
Yeah.
Because we are all here to bring forth something that is better.
Yeah, you can dream bigger. Dream bigger, guys. Doesn't mean, no, I don't have one arm, I cannot do what. You can do anything.
Yeah.
Can do everything.
Yeah, as we say, they do deserve respect. Mm-hmm. They do deserve kindness and a dignity. So they should have a chance to stand up and to bring forth what they want to in the country and as well as in the nation.
We must respect them.
Yeah.
And always give them special treatment so they feel like
they are human.
Yeah.
They are human as young kids. Also, even as adults, there are people with disabilities that do struggle and have grown up with that mentality of like, I cannot make it because I have this type of thing.
But today, they grew up in different communities and just going through a lot. But today, they are people with better...
Actually do get educated. We do have kids for schools for disabled kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, example, is it in Kommersdal?
Mm-hmm. I think it's in Kommersdal. I think we also have one.
Yeah, at Dagbreek, just opposite here, Eagle FM. So guys, look out to those kids, encourage them, talk to them, and work for to bring for them a better fundamental so that they can know that they have a chance to stand up and talk to themselves or what is necessary for them.
We also have one. I think in the north we only have one, the Elua one. I don't know if there are two, but that is the only one that I know. There are two.
Two, one.
I don't know, only one so far, the special one.
Okay, but thank you for that, guys. A huge and heartfelt thank you to UNICEF, Lifeline Childline Namibia, and the European Union.
Thank you for supporting children and young people, promoting their rights, and helping us create awareness about important issues affecting children and communities.
Your support helps us reach more young people with messages of kindness, inclusion, protection, and empowerment. As we have raised forth this topic, not a lot of people talk about it, but we came as Witani Childline radio presenters to bring forth something that will raise a better generation.
Oh, because of you guys. If it was not for UNICEF, Lifeline, Childline Namibia, we couldn't have been here.
And we could not even speak about it. But your support helps us reach more young people with messages of kindness, inclusion, and protection and empowerment.
We truly appreciate your partnership and your commitment to making a positive difference in the lives of the children and young people in Namibia.
From all of us at Witani Childline Radio Program, thank you.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. See you guys next time.
I'm Michaela.
And I'm Helena.
Until next time, keep learning, keep caring, keep including everyone, and stay safe online. Good day, guys.
Have a blessed weekend.
And those were Helena and Michaela with Witani Childline, and you are listening to Witani Childline radio program. And, today's topic was inclusion, stereotype, and myths. Sort of ties into last week's program differently abled people, that was with Elvis Masule and Phoenix Faith. So they, you know, I like how your topic are sort of like transitioning into one another. And thank you very much for that wonderful, informative piece of message. I hope to see you guys next time.
Yeah, we will become big.
Are you becoming big?
Yeah,
we
will.
All right.
Okay.
So that brings us to the end of today's Witani Childline radio program. That's with the Childline Lifeline. Guys, have a good weekend.
Thank you, guys. Don't forget to call. If you need help, 116 106 Witani radio station,
A
Lifeline Childline Namibia.
911.
Yeah. Good day, guys. Bye.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angetashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge patafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM. Hei.
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 4kg real good IQF chicken, mixed portion, only 194 Namibian dollars 99. 5kg marathon white sugar for 99 Namibian dollars 99. And 5kg top score super maize meal, just 69 Namibian dollars 99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 Namibian dollars and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any three participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome. And now let's start with Home Run. A transition from Witani Childline radio program. So we continue with Home Run as usual. That is until the hour of 7 with your favorite duo on your favorite talk radio station here on Eagle FM. And it's Friday, and today's topic just fits the day, because we're going out for weekend. It's a good time to talk about academics. I think that's why, that's one part why I find today's topic somewhat interesting, because it's centered around academics, information gathering, and it's basically like talking about local content creation in the way that we talk about the extractive industry, aka processing everything at home.
Yeah.
But this one is all centered around academics. So we're just talking about research and development, information gathering, and everything being done right here.
Well,
which helps a lot because, I'm just tired of the whole idea. I didn't actually get the bleak picture that you introduced in my head after you pointed out that the people that we finance to go and study at all kinds of fancy universities outside the, outside the country, outside the continent, the intellectual property information that they are creating is left with those universities when they come back here.
Mm.
So that means for them, after they graduate summa or magna cum laude and they come here and we receive them with a traditional dance at the airport. We do that a lot. I don't know why, but we do that a whole lot. We are abusing it at this point, guys.
How would I think that it's only now kept for the athletes? That's for your family to go sing and dance at the airport for you and your international qualification. No, true. We have to look at the realities. Do you know who gave the best, not speech,
mm-hmm.
but sort of like descriptive of, or description of what we've been talking about for the past year?
Yeah.
policymakers go and sit together, you know, and throw beans and food around to get to the gist of a new piece of legislation.
Yeah.
And then the reality on the ground is the complete opposite, or it actually counters what a policy or piece of law wants to achieve. And it comes from that book that I showed you just now.
Yeah.
It was the speaker, Speaker Kugengelwa Amadela.
Yeah.
She was sort of like the keynote speaker, you know, of that event, of that book launch. And it speaks volumes, Helmut, because she herself, she has been in the executive
mm-hmm.
of the government, and she's now in the legislative
yeah.
of the government.
Yeah.
And in both scenarios, you know, she's got a wealth of knowledge to basically describe to anyone out there how you can sit in a lovely air-conditioned office, or like us in a studio, have an idea of something, but the reality of that idea is either five versions far divorced from that idea.
From reality.
And from the reality that you are thinking of, because the reality out there is five versions of it, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
And then we get to a discussion, obviously, of like this one that we've got, you know, which actually speaks towards rural development, basically.
Yeah.
Because the guy that calls himself Mr. Nilaleg, he cited that they've had, you know, goals or targets met.
Yeah.
They were aiming for 20,000 people at one stage. And they achieved 65,000 yeah. people that actually joined onto, which speaks very good to, you know, looking after the natural environment, looking after these, because the natural environment in its entirety is mm-hmm. a resource. If you guys did not know, I'm just reiterating that. So, but then as I sat there listening to his particular address, I realized where the activities are taking place. Because you mentioned a lot of them are in the far north of Namibia. And there is a real need for across Namibia, from urban to rural zones. Why I say urban to rural zones? Obviously, an urban zone has its own particular response mechanisms, departments, budgets, and so on, you know? Which has obviously been the picture that you and I cited regarding the complexities for governors to stand in front of the nation, give a state of the region address, and you and I, we can literally go like, yeah, you're just talking about one side of your region,
yeah,
or it's under this particular conditions of your region, or it's that dimension. Where are the other voices or the other dimensions of data in your region?
Yeah, plus, and I think this is why it's, we should really overhaul the whole state of the region address. First of all, that's, you can just tell.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, you can
be overhauled.
Yeah, you can just if you have ever listened to, I mean, you and I have listened to multiple state of the region addresses,
yeah.
And one thing that you can just pick up from the get go, all you just have to do is just listen to one, and you know that 90% of it is a gloss through.
Yeah.
Now, that gloss through of that information can be attributed to a lot of factors. One which would be obviously not enough time to get into one, you know, into each and every sector with regards to what's taking place. Take for example, in security.
Yeah.
Yeah. In agriculture, in education, what's happening to pensions? And when you're talking about education, you know, education is split in like two main branches, especially, you know, institutional speaking, because you have high institutions and you have the law institutions. And to understand what's going on in all these branches, in all these sectors, you need a very robust information gathering system and compiling and processing, you know, in order to break it down in a way that is very, you know, digestible for those of us that are not statisticians. So this is where I agree with your idea that the NSA has a very big big responsibility, which I don't think, I mean, the responsibility is so big, a lot of us don't understand just how big that responsibility is. But until you start listening to things like State of the Region address or State of the Nation address or budget unveiling, that's when you begin to realize that, okay,
there are gaps.
There are information that you'd like to know more about crimes statistics. It's not enough to say that, crime statistics have decreased by this percentage. Because now the curious part of me would like to know, what can we attribute this reduction to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it?
What type of crimes?
Was it more cars bought, or was it, is the fuel tanks full for the police?
Yeah.
Not making any jokes here, guys. I'm sitting with a serious face here. Because we know what the excuse has been.
Yeah.
I'll give you the example, Almond. Since I'm now sort of like reintegrating back into Rehoboth in one slow manner in a way.
Reintegrating? When did you leave?
I told you it was 24 years ago. So now that my sister is there now, so now, you know, I go visit her like regularly. So my sister then tells me, Dwight, the stories that you would read on the town's Facebook page, you know.
Yeah.
How the people would complain about the police response to events and situations in the town.
Mm.
It's always every Friday night. Now I understand why the police reports that we, the media, get every Sunday accounts for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Because it seems that's only when you Namibians decide to cause havoc.
So is that from Thursday?
So
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday were really nice.
No, we are peaceful. You know, that's ultimately where the exceptions that Anacleta used to report about.
Yeah.
Because Anacleta would report on those exceptions, you know, they're from Kavango East or Kavango West, or in some cases even they're from a Zambezi dimension. And those would be the exceptions because they would be like smack bang in the middle of the week, you know.
Yeah.
It's not to say that crime has a set time, but from the police reports that I've been getting for the past 3 years, it seems like it's a set time between Thursday and Sunday.
So we have
anything past that? Anything past that? You know, okay, anything past that, technically it carries over like an accounting balance.
Yeah.
It carries over to the next week.
The following week.
Yeah. So it's just very odd. In terms of what I've observed, it's just weird. But you can see a funny thing primarily from you know, if you have access, like the privilege we have as media to these reports. But the basic thing that occurs now is the human impact dimension that I would hear about, for example, like from the community of Rehoboth. My sister would say, she can read like the comments and like discussions and the engagements, and people say, yeah, where is this police? Or the police are useless. And then people would say, yeah, what happened? No, I called them to report an event. And then the response was, we don't have petrol in the bucket. Now, the guy answering the phone, whoever that's
a serious answer?
Yes. Whoever that uniform is, nah.
Uh-huh.
Whoever that uniform is, tells the person in need that response. Nah?
Yeah.
But if that thing gets elevated to a regional commander, then suddenly you would hear a different kind of a scenario. Like, no, you know, there was, the resources are there, stuff like that.
Yeah, but that makes it sound like damage control.
Yes, which is a public relations
It becomes a PR.
Yeah. So, but let's, I'm not focusing on the police per se about this conversation, because obviously our discussion is all about how to monitor natural resources on a community level, involving the community, and, you know, to what particular means. Now,
we could not have picked the best time to have this discussion, because feels into yesterday's discussion.
Yes, it does. And it even links into that thing that I went to this morning about that book launch, because we will get to that discussion. I want you to get your own book. I want you to get your own copy.
And then I'm going to swing by on Monday.
Yeah, and it's for free, just mind you.
What floor is that?
7th.
Okay.
In that building. So, as we obviously look towards resource management, climate change hanging over our heads, because later this month I'm going to participate in a webinar from the University of Stellenbosch about the impact of a super El Nino on Southern Africa.
Of course.
And that's going to be a conversation, Helmut, that we would definitely want to dissect here on the Home Run. Because I'm also waiting for the COP. No, that starts next week. The desertification COP starts next week.
That would be 17 now.
Yeah.
16 was in.
17 is this Saturday. What is today? 14.
Yeah.
15, 16.
Would that be a COP 17 of desertification? Yeah, because 16 was in Saudi Arabia.
Year. Yeah, because it's almost every second year.
Yeah.
So that COP is now starting next week in Mongolia. And I also want to understand all dimensions of that conversation, because what was one of the drawbacks of Saudi Arabia was you only get to see the one main hall where leadership people are sitting. So now a prime minister, a sheikh, a sultan, a president would say one thing there, which in many cases to the ordinary person on the ground, it's just, you know, it's just a word salad that you are getting, because you don't understand what is this person talking to regarding your context of Namibia. Now, it is a bit tedious for me to then tell you, the Namibian, go and read Namibia's nationally determined contribution, because the Conference of Party, which is, just so that you know, Helmut, I also had to discover recently that there's actually one massive agreement that Namibia is party to. It's known as the convention, the CBD. It comes from this thing. You heard me ask the people, why are they using the acronym or the abbreviation CBD? Because CBD can also mean, you know, the holy herb reference, you know. CBD can also, or because they definitely didn't talk about central business district in a city.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely didn't reference
something
that.
Completely different.
Yeah. So they kept using CBD because the important thing for Nilaleg is, and this monitoring platform, this digital platform for, that is operated by UNAM, is it tracks all. You know, think about like the SDG thing that we did like back in 2024.
Yeah.
The SDG tracker about Namibia's particular implementation pathway or rate of implementation. Remember when I brought out that GIZ document that had measured Namibia, which showed that how we were technically in some places standing still, moving back in others, and then we had made great strides in some of the SDGs. So this particular platform tries to do what that SDG tracker does, but it takes the climate agreements. Yeah. Because primarily through the whole audio that I shared with you, and don't worry guys, we wrote an article, it's in the e-paper, as well as also David had the opportunity of dissecting the contributions given. But remember, during the whole course of the audios, very few presents, or how should I say, indications or illustrations were made to the agreements, the multinational, the international agreements Namibia is party to, you know, around climate change. And then I had to go look up, okay, what is this convention on biodiversity? Is it the convention of biodiversity? But it's actually three treaties Namibia signed back. And the funny thing is that this treaty is back in 1992, to be honest.
1992.
Let me just be sure, because I wrote in the article, I referenced the three treaties. Okay, CBD is one of them, the Convention on Biodiversity. So, it's known as the Rio Conventions. That's the three treaties.
Rio is in Brazil.
Brazil, yeah. So it was known as the Conference of Parties level back in 1992 when the Conference of Parties in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The guy's name is Nishidi. That guy, Jonas Nishidi, from project manager for Nilaleg.
Yeah.
So Namibia is party to all three of these treaties in the Rio Conventions.
We're just signing everything.
No, Helmut, because we keep hearing about the Paris Climate Agreement and of the Kyoto Protocol.
Yeah.
Because the Kyoto Protocol has been I think it's a 1980-something or 1990 global climate agreement that gives birth to all these things that we've seen, you know, all these discussions and all these platforms that we've held also here on an urban context, even here on Eagle FM, that we've dissected all of them in so many particular things. So who would have known that the Rio de Janeiro Conference of Parties is the one that actually branches out into three particular treaties? So these three treaties is the UNFCCC, it's the United Nations
Framework Convention on Climate Change.
That one. Then it's the Convention on Biodiversity, CBD. Then it's the UNCCD, Convention on the Combat of Desertification, which starts next week.
Yeah.
The one in Mongolia. Still a little bit perturbed why I could not go, but yeah.
Mongolia.
Yeah.
You want to be in Mongolia?
There was an application process, submit, throw in your articles, motivate what you're going to do as a Namibian there. Man, am I perturbed. You know, it seems like the selling feature of saying Namibia is the only country in the world with two deserts doesn't seem to hit hit home, you know, those factualities. So, so Namibia has these three main agreements or treaties that form this basis. So, under that particular scenario is what you can see what this monitoring program has to do. How does community level members that Mr. Nishidi cited, how do they intervene, for example, like in land restoration, like in what was the other thing that he also mentioned? There was another one where they also had to deal literally with plant life in a physical sense, rural community members. But once again, we can obviously see that it's limited. We know there are 3 million Namibians versus 65,000 participants. 65,000 definitely is not even a percentage of 300,000, which is 10% of Namibians in that regard. So you would be at a 0.something percentage. Because if you really want to see real change, you know, real change, you would look at how broad or how impactful is a program, for example, like Nilaleg. Look, I'm glad we get the opportunity, Helmut, to see a government-driven, predominantly government-driven program, the Namibia Integrated Landscape Approach for Enhancing Livelihoods and Environmental Governance to Eradicate Poverty. This definitely is rural development. It's a rural development program.
Yeah.
Which then also, at the same time, is that the same Minister of Environment that is in charge of this particular program also has the... What was that other thing, Hamid, Rural Integrated... What is that other thing's name, Dochman?
Was it mentioned in the discussion?
No. Oh. We did it last year. We dissected that thing where the civil society people who drive that program a lot. Community-based resource management, that's all. CBRM. Community-based resource management. CBRM, yes. We dissected that one. Now, CBRM and Nilaleg, in names, they sound completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But community-based resource management and Namibia, let me see this massive name again. Namibia Integrated Landscape Approach for Enhancing Livelihoods and Environmental Governance to Eradicate Poverty. Yes, it's a massive name. They are both basically the same thing. It's just with CBRM, civil society is heavily present. You get conservationists, meaning there are scientists present there. You get scientists firstly. You get the tourism sector is greatly involved there. Businesses start up from CBRM dimension, or you get businesses buying into a CBRM dimension. For example, a good example of that is there's a lodge on the other side of Etosha Park as you enter. It's run by one of Namibia's, actually by Namibia's largest lodge company. what's the company's name? Tochma. Starts with a W.
WG.
Gondwana. But it's on the other side of the lodge. As you enter into, past, you now across the red line, the veterinary cordon line. In terms of imaginary thinking, you know, you came through Ochozonchuba. You came through into Etosha. This from Ochozonchuba.
Yeah.
And when you exit at that end, you're past the red line. You just imagine that you're past the red line.
Yeah. Headed north.
But you're now literally in. I can't remember which region is that immediately that borders onto Etosha. The lodge is right there from the gate. Now that is definitely a CBRM and a Nila Leg dimension. You can immediately see it because actually it's a CBRM dimension because the community is involved. Or the local community, whether it be a communal or traditional authority, communal land board or traditional authority, they're because that land becomes communal land when you enter on that side of the national park, you enter into traditional authority land or into communal land, right?
Yeah.
So immediately, right there, a community is directly involved. So there is a CBRM dimension. Now Nila Leg. What I also discern from the targeted areas in the country are also in communal land areas from what Mr. Nishidi highlighted. Because he didn't highlight anything from Ochozonchuba or Kunene downwards. He didn't. So, in terms of the examples, they technically are the same thing in my understanding because I can see there's a resource, there's a community, and the community has to play a part in managing the resource and ensuring that the resource is there for everybody. So meaning sustainable use for everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Community. Yeah. Communal. Makes sense.
Yeah. So this particular monitoring platform, obviously, that UNAM is managing or operating, will then try to measure successes in one way or another in accordance with the goals stipulated in these three treaties that form part of the Rio Convention. Basically, in a nutshell, that's the particular aim.
Now, this is where my pattern recognition goes nuts.
Stop making
now.
Me famous, Helmut. Stop making me famous.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
This is where my pattern recognition now goes nuts because every time that every time that we bring up discussions, especially around initiatives that are more focused in rural areas than they are in urban areas, it's like much of the activities is centered around what's taking place in mostly rural areas, It speaks to inclusion if you look at it, because you're talking about getting the community involved in whatever it is that you're doing. And basically, governance is supposed to be centered around that, and which is that's exactly why we have, things like, consultations, public stakeholder engagement. So it's very superb in terms of inclusive in reference to governance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it also becomes very important in the discussion around urban to rural, urban to rural migration because. But when you start looking at it from a resources management, you just don't want to manage it. You just don't want to manage it from central government. Mm-hmm. You want to have this is also why I like civil society organizations, because they are more involved, because the whole idea behind civil society organizations is to be on the ground with people rather than just sitting in some air conditioned room somewhere in the capital assuming what's going on the ground.
Yeah.
And I believe that now for central government that's where I really appreciate your standing committees, whether it's a national assembly or national council. So the point is to be on the ground to try to understand what is going on by getting involved, by going hands on. Now there's something that was pointed out by Mr. Ngishidi, that is it something like we don't want initiatives that die with the project?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's much of the bigger problem that we deal with for a lot of initiatives. You can have a civil society organization or an NGO that's funded by all kinds of, whether it's a domestic or foreign donors. Now they start spending that money in a lot of initiatives. And I know a bunch of people that works for the World Food Program, mm-hmm. with the UN. So they just they're very strict. You have to understand most of these organizations, and that's one thing I like. Their financial reporting is very, I find it very, strictly awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they are required to spend the money, and they are required to report in a very, in a very clear way as to what the money was spent on, but commercial brand.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, my. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala oshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fana Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 2 minutes into the hour of five, and you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So, back to the discussion of creating initiatives that are created by mostly projects, whether it's an NGO, civil society organization, say WhatsApp group, and then they have a tendency of dying, with the project. The initiatives tends to die with the project, and what came to my head when Mr. Gishidi said that the sounds of NAM initiative that we had,
yeah, the one that you and Chicken had
that's when I learned financial reporting is not easy. You're gonna be you're gonna be on top of the game. Yeah, you can't afford to get things wrong halfway. You have to start from day one. Get everything ready from day one. Gather your team and tell them, I want every single receipt from today. Each and every single, I don't care what you bought, I want the receipt. Just bring the receipt. Because if you find yourself, take for example, running a 10 months project, and you're only starting to, you know, to think of the, okay, you know what, how do I bring to, okay, okay, what did I spend this money on? How can I compile this report? Because they will just send you one giant form that you will have to complete, fill in all the details, who did what, or what money was spent on. And you have to, you know, everything that you are putting on that form, you have, paperwork based evidence that is going with that form. And now, you don't want to be looking for receipts 3 months to the deadline. And that's when I realized, you know what? Now, there is...
You're looking for receipts,
yeah, from 5 months ago. Now, those people, I mean, even if you go to that service station or that grocery store, they'll be like, dude, 5 months ago? Are you kidding me? But the thing is, the reason why that came to my mind is, we had, you know, this initiative was a very awesome initiative for the creative sector. So it's about going to basically outside the urban areas for the most part. Yeah. And wherever you find yourself, wherever we're holding that show, the condition we're given is you are looking for, make sure that 90% of the performers that are participating in this initiative are upcoming artists, because the goal is to, to get the, to find the talent on the ground and give them a platform to basically express themselves. Sounds of NAM. And it was a wonderful initiative. And then the project came to an end. And we just had to sit there and watch the project die. I mean, the initiative. Because I'm sitting there going like, just 2, 3, 4 more, four more rounds of this would have been awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
So if you look at, in terms of time frame, how long was it supposed to be versus how long did it actually last?
Yeah. It was a 10, it was a 10 months program.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
How long did it last?
That's how long it lasted. You know, it went for about 10 months and 15, 20 days.
Okay, but how long did you guys want to make it last? If we interrogate, like, initiative-wise, what did you guys, after that first 10 months, what did you guys see, imagine, or envisage, you know, like a dream?
Yeah, compiling all the report and say, and everything in terms of, participations and, prospects.
Not like that.
Yeah. So,
let's say this was 2023.
Yeah.
You did this in 2023.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you guys plan on bringing it back
2024? Yeah.
And then?
Compile all the paperwork, send everything. But now, the thing is, there's one guy that we're working with.
Okay.
Yeah, who was running everything admin, especially, the money guy from South Africa.
And I don't want you to reference anything that might
No. No, don't worry. Yeah. Now, look, the thing is, the guy was awesome when it comes to basically coordinating and keeping us, in the loop with regards to, I really looked up to the guy. I still look up to the guy to this day, because, that was my first time. I had no clue what I was doing 90% of the time. But, he assured us that I'm here. I'm just a call or an email away. If there's anything you need to know, if there's any specific way that you need to do something and you're stuck, give me a call. Yeah. And so we're just, for the most part, communicating with him. And, of course, I'm more like at the tail section of the, I'm at Oshikoto, a part of things. So, I'm just running everything either through Kosi or Chicken. So now those guys are now communicating with the big boss both here and in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the sense of NAM for me, for the creative sector, is one of those things that came to my head when Mr. Kishidi pointed out that we don't want initiatives that are dying with the project. Because as soon as that project came to an end, now as Helmut, you're just sitting there going like, okay, you know what? I really want this to go on maybe for another 6 or 7 or maybe 10 more months, maybe a year or two, because it would really be beneficial to the talent that is, because wherever we went. And now you have to understand that we're literally being paid to throw parties. And that's cool. And now, that's what entertainment is about. It's about creativity.
No.
Now,
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, the fact that when the project came to an end, the entire initiative basically fell apart. And that was, yeah, it was mostly one, the financing, because, oh boy, the logistics, you know, you need a lot of logistics, because you need, you obviously need well your own sound system, but we didn't have that, we kept renting, because which was a good idea, because that's also one thing that you know that the donors wanted to point out.
Yeah.
So you have the sound system guys. So you have now the sound system guys. Maybe they just have the sound system, but they don't have the bus to basically carry everything around. So you also have to find someone with a vehicle that's big enough to carry everything. Yeah. And now you have to wherever we went, one of the requirements was make sure that just don't walk around with a bunch of rental cars. If you are going to, if you are going to hold a show in Kobabis, for example, make sure that the creatives, 90% of them are upcoming, and 90% of them are coming from that particular town.
Okay, so it's supposed to be a scenario of proving local content.
Yeah.
That was difficult,
eh?
No,
bouncers, security guards, clubs, and get everything from that community. Yeah.
And that's a good idea, primarily, Ahmed, because if you think about it like in a business case sense, technically, because this is a project that you guys came with.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from a business sense case, the business sense case would have been the intellectual properties there that you guys have. And then you've got to make this a thing that sticks.
Yeah,
it did stick, because you guys did find out what are the growing pains in this and the likes.
Yeah,
but I can still see specifically into the next year. Let's say the next year.
Yeah,
if you look at Entertainment Helmet, there's something that you guys could suffer from, known as fatigue. What? Not like actual, like
physical fatigue.
Not that fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Audience fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Audience fatigue is that they've seen the Helmet.
Like 1,000 times.
1,000 times on the roadshow.
Yeah.
Basically. And the dimensions in between the two different... Yes, there is a common denominator between what Nishini said and what you guys have.
Yeah.
The time frame, the time span, the longevity, how long the thing lasts.
Yeah.
The initiative. But here's the selling point, basically.
Yeah.
The selling point is, and I suspect you guys were the idea... You guys were the creators of the idea.
Yeah.
Is that you guys go back next year, you do the same thing from local resources.
Now, one way we were basically, I think of it was, make some kind of a carnival type of event out of it. Yeah.
And one of the key things...
Now that would be like once a year.
But
that's a logistics that require a whole lot of, vetting process to basically gather all the talent for the large section of the year, and then just they pick like the main performers of the main event at the end of the year.
Yeah. Now ask yourself the question, how is it that, for example, what's that thing that that has now become a feature here in Windhoek from the German community?
Is it Vika? Because now I was thinking about Kaigams.
No, Vika.
Mm.
That is driven by the tourism department of City of Windhoek.
Yeah.
That has government
backing.
I'm talking about a social setting.
Yeah.
Because you guys were operating in a social setting.
Yeah.
Vika Lake is a social setting.
Yeah.
You guys knew what the product was. You knew what you wanted to do. You knew how you wanted to get this thing a Namibianized, basically.
Yeah.
Which is also what Nila Lake tries to do. But go and look at the older templates that exist still in Namibia, like Vika.
Yeah.
If you look at Vika, how does Vika still come about? Well, there are dry years, yes. You would see the bus looks a bit like a cart, like someone's double in 1 year. Last year there would have been a G-Wagon to transport the king, the Vika king and queen.
Yeah.
And this year it's someone's double cab. You can see that.
There's a decline in quality.
No.
A decline.
No. You have to think strategically. There are alternatives available.
Yeah.
So, The nice thing is to identify from what you guys had.
Yeah.
The idea is still alive.
Yeah.
You guys just need perseverance. Meaning you just need to wake up every morning and get that thing alive again.
Yeah.
With Neuralink and much of like these rural community programs and initiatives that Nishidi also cited. But it didn't cite all the other programs that the government has tried running, for example. Which, for example, comes from that PUIS illegal lithium mining report also.
Yeah.
Remember what the standing committee went and asked the mines officials about the small-scale miners?
Because
mm-hmm. suddenly the small-scale miners pop up.
They're in a dimension of, yeah, this is our ancestral lands. We are not being allowed to practice our freedoms and stuff like that. And the ministry doesn't want to help us with getting our licenses. And then when they went and asked the ministry, hello, these guys are throwing, you know, accusations here, spurious accusations at you guys. And then the minister went and said, yeah, we told them, we advised them, instead of Dwight and Helmut registering for a license.
ShopRite's birthday is in the Major League with major low prices. Get 750 mils Nola sunflower oil, only $29.99. 5 kg nice rice parboiled rice for $89.99. And 5 kg Pokomo fit cook wheat flour, just $72.99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's Major League birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any three participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite. ShopRite's birthday is in the Major League with major low prices. Get 750 mils Nola sunflower oil, only $29.99. 5 kg nice rice parboiled rice for $89.99. And 5 kg Pokomo fit cook wheat flour, just $72.99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's Major League birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any three participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuali. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. and we continue where we left off. That's yep. with the social discussion. So we had the idea.
You still have the idea.
We still have the idea.
The nice thing is, the idea does not expire, Hamoud.
Mm.
It's the same thing like with my sister's book business. It's not a product that can expire. It's an idea that can be resuscitated just like that. Those are the dimensions in terms of Namibia's economy that Namibia needs.
Mm-hmm.
Even, for example, like the endeavors that Nilalake tries to achieve and community-based resource management also really has. Now, if you had to do a comparison in terms of who actually is driving change, who is leading in terms of actually manifesting in some sort of economic benefit, I would argue that CBN, community-based natural resource, CBNRM, is a front runner. The idea you guys had, it's a front runner. The idea my sister had with her bookshop, it's a front runner. The concerns were just each one has individual, unique, you know, growing pains, logistics, you know, things associated to your idea.
Yeah.
Nilalake, being now obviously carried by government, monitored by another government agency, which is UNAM, having various government resources directed to it, speaks basically, okay, that's government. That's government's baby.
Mm-hmm.
Because if government just goes and stays silent as a silent observer, as a silent participant, let's say they just go and say, okay, we won't come anymore for field visits. Let's see this thing organically grow between the community members.
Yeah.
Does it stick here in the minds of the community members? Hamoud, and I know you know, like you said, you know also people at FAO. I know you know also people in the rest of government.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will tell you why a lot of projects die outside of Windhoek or Comas or in the other parts of the country is because in some cases the people are not shown how to sustainably carry these things through so that the project carries longevity.
Mm-hmm.
So many scenarios of in the rural communities. There was an idea once, I won't mention the agency's name, but it worked closely, what I can assume, with agriculture pre-COVID, a fish farm. Like literally a fish farm.
Yeah.
On land. Inland.
There was also an idea like that at a place called Kangongo. And it's the
same Kangongo that you told me yesterday. The Kangongo in Angola.
Oh, yeah, on both sides of the river. Both sides of the river/border.
Your people must make decisions there, Helmut. People must have a vote there.
Look, this is something that's been, going for a very long time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hundreds of years.
I wouldn't put it in maybe hundreds
because
of years.
Because if the Portuguese left Kangongo, Angola there,
mm-hmm.
then Kangongo, Namibia is...
I think the name is from the name is from the Ngongo fruits because there are a lot of them on both sides of.
So it's a particular plant that.
It's basically the same terrain that's separated by a river, and that's something that you find, in pretty much all the areas that on both Namibia and Angolan side.
Yeah.
Yeah. But coming up with back to the ideas. Coming up with the ideas is not really much of a big deal.
Mm.
It's there are several. I believe there are two main things that are basically central to an idea making it. One, it's navigating challenges because you are never going to come up with an idea that doesn't have challenges. Each idea is going to present its own challenges, especially economic challenges, and especially now. Where you have a lot of global economic issues that have cascading negative effects that are also impacting countries that have little to nothing to do with those events, and they also can, you know, the best they can do is try to survive the cascading negative effects.
Yeah.
Now, it's keeping it consistent enough for it to stick. That's what is now. I think one of the biggest challenges of running a business, especially, not just in Namibia, I think it's just globally, because it's keeping it consistent enough for it to stick. Now, when you find yourself in a developing country like Namibia, those challenges doubles. And now, because now I've come across a lot of content creators on social media. There's one girl that asked a very, you know, what she thought was a very funny question. I mean, it was funny, but it was answered in a lot of serious way by people that are running small businesses. Mm. Yeah. The question she asked was, for those of you people running the business, when do you get to keep the money? Because, you know, she just kept hearing, business people talking about, okay, you know what, I make this amount of money and these are my expenses, and more often they have overwhelming expenses, from operation to, you know, to the infrastructure to keep up.
The business has the expenses.
The business has the expenses.
Not the individual.
Yeah. So the question of when do you get to keep the money? And one guy now answered that in a very serious way, where he said that running a business, you have to be flexible with your emotions if you don't want to get a heart attack, because you are dealing with more often two extremes. Mm. It's either things are going really good or things are going really bad.
Well put. Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, because one day you are driving in a fancy car, and the next day
you are the one riding the bicycle.
You are sacrificing everything to keep the business afloat.
Everything.
Yeah,
and I'm not laughing because it's just a joke. I've actually seen it, guys. This is a reality in the Namibian like micro business landscape.
Now, mind you, the guy that's answering it like that is an American.
Yeah.
Now, think about being a Namibian.
Yeah. Think about being, and in the Namibian case now, in the American case, Hamad, an MSME's organic growth, if consistently done, is literally within the 2-year time frame that I learned in my textbooks.
Yeah.
If you are in South Africa, 2 years as well. If you're in, I don't know Zimbabwe that very well. Yeah. I can't speak about Zimbabwe. But I would assume they've, since they have more than 10 million people in that country, I'd also put it at 2 years maximum. You know, that is your growing pains for an MSME business.
So you're looking at a 2-3-year time period.
You know, your first 2 years are your most crucial years. Yeah. That's the time period you've got to overcome.
Isn't that a part where we have about 5 years here?
Yeah. Namibia is 5. Do you know why Namibia is 5?
Yeah.
Has been the question that you and I kept asking, that we introduced back in last year and in 2024. How do you make the money move in this country? If geographically the markets are so far away. Okahanja is 60 kilometers away, so that's easy. Vrebel is 90 kilometers. Okay, question marks. Otjiwarongo, 300 Ks.
Yes.
The coast, 300 Ks. Hobabas, 200, almost 300 Ks.
Yeah, almost 300.
So you immediately sit with a headache, because you would have wanted, okay, from Windhoek, let's say to the airport, 30 Ks away, would have been another major town.
Yeah.
But the airport is not a major town. The airport is...
Plus, the airport is not a town. It's an airport.
It's a piece of infrastructure. So it's not a town.
Yeah.
The downside of distance and the infrastructure has been Namibia's curse. It will still stay in Namibia's curse. Yes, making babies is not just the answer, guys. It's how do we play clever with resources? How clever are we with resources? For example, what would have helped, let's say, Irongo and Otjiwarongo on the way to the coast, if you're driving all the way to the coast now, is from Okahanja to the next town, Karibab. Karibab now becomes like this linkage, another town with a unique economy. Unique. Not that farm facade it's currently owning, where you even go like, okay, sharp Owens, I'll see you. And you just fly through the town, you know, because it was the town that does the L.
Mm-hmm.
When you come in, you do an L. No? Karibab does a curve and a curve out. Yeah. I think it's at the next town, Usikas, where it does the L. When you get to Usikas, same facade as you saw in Karibab. It's half dead, half alive, half asleep, half awake. You don't know where you are. You know where you are. But you can see the first thing that both towns need, is serious investment in the property markets.
property markets allow for new people to move to those towns, new projects, new businesses, new ideas coming up. You guys could have been like an introduction to such an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to Arandas. Arandas is too detached from the main road because you have to turn off to get to Arandas. Yeah. But Arandas is still there. Same thing. Now, if each of those three towns between Okahandja and the coast saw massive economic investments, it always starts with the property market. And then it starts with the kinds of consumers you're attracting. And then it starts with how big the towns will grow. And then it starts with, you know, you start seeing other benefits like the schools have now more students and learners. And there's like a thriving economy now busy operating within there. They would then have set the scene for allowing the coast, the three coastal towns, Henties Bay, Swakop, and Balfour's Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We were almost there. To be connectors between Okahandja and Comas and Erongo. But we're also not there yet. But before that, ad break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Welcome back. So we continue with our inclusion discussion in natural resources. But brings up, if we're going to talk about inclusion on a civil society level or on an NGO level, with regards to not just the environmental protection and maintenance and taking care of, but in the overall, basically, generally resources. Protection and beneficiation. What that brings up is one conversation that I don't think we're having a lot.
No, we're not.
Small-scale mining.
No, we're not. And from that report, that OIS lithium mining report,
yeah.
The way I see it specific, because I always sat with the idea about asking the question in my head.
Yeah.
So why do we only have small-scale miners in that part of Namibia?
Yeah.
Why? Because Helmut, that has been our unanswered question since we started doing the home run together since 2024,
mm-hmm.
and since you and I bragged about our our particular foundational document, which is a book, Robin Sherborne's The Guide to the Namibian Economy.
Yeah.
We've been asking the question, but the question had been staring at us in our faces: why don't we have more small scale mining?
I think it's the centralization issue that we are dealing with here. Not the centralization as in the way that we, you know, the problem that we have as a country.
Yeah.
But, small-scale mining, as you can imagine, just in their operations on the ground themselves, I don't think they are as connected as they should be if they want to build, an industry, small though it may be. Now, I'm saying that because I'm looking at it from the perspective of just how the informal market operates. From take for example vegetables.
Mm.
So yeah, you have everyone that everyone that sells tomatoes, cabbages, or whatever produce. They are producing these things separately, and I don't think they have any type of a good enough relationship that that can help them advance their market to the point of of what the International Labour Organization would like to achieve, which is the formalization of the informal market.
Mm.
Yeah. You see, hang on a second. When did we have a discussion that pointed out that a large chunk of employment came out of the informal market?
Which, well, okay, it's referenced in most of the things.
First of all, it's either agriculture or
It was the census discussion last year. No, not last year. Yeah, last year. No, not last year. 2024, when we began.
Uh-huh.
We dissected the census. No, it was the labor report last year. It was the labor report last year because the census report did not mention where everybody is employed in. It was the labor report.
Because look at it this way: you have a lot of opportunities out there.
And also earlier this year, the mining sector met with the parliamentary standing committee on natural resources because they also referenced it there. Remember,
informal market.
Yeah. Okay, not just informal market, but because they cited the mining sector, and then you and I we went and looked up, and then we realized, oh. There's a whole bunch of info here.
Boy, it exists.
Yeah.
Now, look, the thing is, the informal, you know, unlike produce like tomatoes and onions, if it's not well regulated, if the extractive industry if the equivalent of the of that for the extractive industry is not well regulated, you end up with what you call illegal mining. I've never heard of someone complaining about illegal tomato producers, but
only in Namibia.
Illegal onion producers, but
okay, not Namibia. Okay, guys, I just threw Namibia in there for the sake of it. I'm sorry.
Look, but illegal mining is if it's not well regulated, if it's not if a central government or legislations, basically authorities, are not ahead of it, you end up with a problem that the South Africa have been having for a very long time. Last year, they had to send in the military.
Yeah.
So that's why being ahead of it, you are now just going to create this environment that I believe Ghana and Ivory Coast have basically done brilliantly well. Because if you look at the cocoa industry, they supply the global chocolate industry.
I forgot.
That's another talk.
That recording of yesterday.
Yeah,
I've got it. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
It's in the back pocket.
Yeah. So anyway, now the thing is. It's not just that Ghana and Ivory Coast has two giant commercial farms that's producing much of the cocoa. No. It's just it's just a bunch of separate cocoa farmers working separately.
Yeah.
And they have one just a central market that that buys all their stuff and then ship it to Nestle and Mondelez and stuff. Now, I think creating the same type of opportunity or the same type of of blueprint in terms of how to go about not just producing the product, not just extracting the product in terms of the extractive industry, but also in terms of where to sell it. Take, for example, if I decided, even if the central government woke up today and decided to say, you know what, whatever natural resources that's underground that you are aware of being near you, you can just extract it and then, well, it's yours because you're a Namibian. You'd find a lot of people with diamonds and gold not knowing where to where to take it.
Yep. And there's nothing wrong, guys, with... because that is fundamentally the conversation that Africans try to achieve, and specifically in Namibia, that particular pan-Africanist view of you as a Namibian, the resource below the ground, below your feet, is supposed to be something that you need to have a say in and potentially a piece of ownership.
Yeah.
Although the dimension of ownership is the questionable one because...
Actually, it's not just questionable. It's very, very, very technical.
That's why I said questionable. Because if you were the small-scale miners, Helmut, the first thing in there, facing them, the first hurdle for them was the thing that the Ministry of Mines mentioned in that report about the Uis lithium mining was register every year your licenses as a collective, meaning pool resources.
Yeah.
Do you know what the ministry was actually
telling them? As a collective.
Yeah. Do you know what the ministry was actually telling them?
Yeah.
Become a cooperative. Do you know which company in Namibia is a cooperative? A successful cooperative.
Right. Much of the multinational companies are, you know, have, there's a reason why they have group at the end.
Yeah. Because they were a
World Bank group.
Group.
Volkswagen group.
Group. There are three partners, four partners. Somebody, they contributed things.
Yeah. A lot, I mean, you know, that's something that I find very fascinating about much of this multinational, you know, conglomerates, because the, you just have group at the end, because I think that would be a very nice lesson for a lot of, you know, for a lot of us that are trying to build something up that, you know, it's, well, collaboration is key to surviving.
Yeah. It is, because with those small-scale miners, the Ministry of Mines and Mines at the time of that report back in 2023 was basically telling these guys, become a cooperative. As a cooperative, you pool resources.
Mm-hmm.
As a cooperative, which technically is a company, you have the ability to meet everybody's needs.
Plus, you have a lot of bargaining power.
You can appoint a CEO. Yes, you can employ people. But at least you would know as a small-scale miner, there's an entity doing all the heavy lifting. Helmut, when you guys were doing the Sounds of NAMM, did you realize all the administrative headaches? I remember you were still sitting here like late at night making phone calls. After our show, guys. After our show, Helmut would be here sweating buckets for no reason.
Admin is not easy. Believe me.
Yeah. You were not used to admin. Yeah. I am used to admin.
No, I don't think I'm.
Not that I'm pitching here for.
I don't think I'm going to get used to admin.
For an administrative job. But if people don't know about the heavy lifting in documentation handling, archiving, monthly deadlines, meaning you need to know to make payments, to submit, to update things every month, for example, to NAMRA, Social Security, your local authority's particular fitness, or what that department that manages fitness. And just for the interesting sake, I must now use a laundry to the other heavy, my personal heavy lifting of my laundry. I use a laundrette. And I stood there reading yesterday the what's the thing's name?
The terms and condition?
No. The fitness certificate that Sirivan took issues to. And it's interesting, Helmut. The certificate looks like a basic thing. It has an expiry date, so it means every year you've got to renew this thing.
Yeah.
And then there's, and you can obviously see the burden it places on businesses.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you can see what a cooperative can do, it can do all the heavy lifting. Now, this also means that this idea of a cooperative, guys, can even help you with your community development initiatives. If you're in a communal land area or in a traditional authority zone, you can suggest this idea because it becomes a, you can actually firstly manage resources. You can manage inputs and outputs, which are also resources in a way.
Mm.
You can manage the direction, the strategic direction of not just the project, but also the entity, and then how it then culminates in what direction the project takes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't help you come speak to my family with my wife and kids and my dog and cat, Khutasa, and you go speak to Helmut with his wife and kids.
Separate.
And donkey and horse and cow and goat, Khutasa. And then we are two different, you know, sides of the same coin. We are Namibians, yeah, but we are in two different scenarios.
Yeah.
So you've got to understand a vehicle to use in order to achieve your goals. I don't know if we've registered more cooperatives from community-based scenarios, but monitoring would become easier.
Plus, compiling, you know, whoever is doing the, you know, the paperwork, you know, you're making it easy for them to put that information together in terms of financial reporting, for example.
And there's a face, there's an identity, there's a contact number, there's an email, there potentially would be a website to reach.
Mm-hmm.
besides now having to identify out of a massive ministry, where do I go for what? For example. For example, I'm not saying that the ministry is not easy to navigate, but I'm just citing, we are accumulating these organizations in Namibia that are starting to look a bit big, Helmut. And we've also got to identify dimensions of how do people actually maneuver within Namibia. And I'm talking about the economy-wise.
Yeah.
Remember the discussion on markets and the green on consumer markets, small markets, where the guy with the broccoli didn't understand, or technically did not know marketry. He didn't apply market research, which was very funny. I mean, the first thing
is very interesting.
Well, from what I could discern, he's probably a trust fund baby. He's probably a trust fund baby. And he didn't understand the first thing. Look, there's nothing wrong if you're a trust fund baby now.
Mm-hmm.
And you are inheriting, let's say your dad tells you, or your parent or whatever, or the trust fund tells you, on the farm, your family farm, because he said, there is a family farm. On the family farm, go and grow your broccoli in that corner of the farm. There's nothing wrong with that, Helmut, because you know it's contained within a specific resource.
Yeah.
But he went out into the wild. I'm not calling a communal land area the wild. Please understand that also. He went out in the broad world, you know, to interact with people, to interact with Namibians, to experience Namibia. Not that I would say that it's my life goal potentially to live in a tent.
And experience
experience Namibia that way, because there are snakes, bugs, and all kinds of, you know, nighttime critters that you don't want creeping up into your
bed. Actually, that way of experiencing Namibia, I have experienced Namibia already. That's my childhood.
Have you seen the YouTube videos of people's experiences while camping at night?
No.
Like the one guy who camped out somewhere in one of those North American national parks. And the cougar comes and looks at him through his tent. Like, literally, the cougar, here's the tent. Ne?
Oh, the wild animal. Fiber. Okay, I was thinking about a different one.
You were thinking about the human cougar?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Rewind. So, this wildcat comes and tries to peer through
the tent
fabric, né? And it, you know, was what a tent does, since it's elastic. So as you press your face against
it bends.
It starts making that indentation
of
the animal's face. The cougar is trying to see what is inside.
Where's the snack?
Yeah. So scenarios like that, you know, I don't envisage myself, you know, trying to experience that. But anyway,
me neither.
So the guy, the broccoli guy, our favorite other personal, you know, reference point in our discussions. He didn't do his basic market research.
Yeah.
Now, luckily for him, some of his inputs technically were within his cost parameters.
Yeah.
So because he said, I remember in that audio, at the end of the audio, that much of the costs were to the tune of 10,000 while he was busy rehabilitating the piece of land. That technically
that
was
been exhausted. At
that
the
was
time
exhausted then, yeah. because of monoculture crop cultivation.
Yeah.
So that particular exercise obviously showed. Okay, so he's running his total costs over 3 years, because the last 2 years, which were the years of sowing the seeds, seeing the thing grow, watering the plant, the plantation, and then harvesting. That last 2 years forms part of the 5-year period that he spent there. But the first 3 years was just him rehabilitating and camping there. So he had no house. He doesn't have a house. So you can immediately see from his endeavor, his costs were contained within 5 years. Because I'm taking his word for it. I don't have
He's just living in a tent, so you don't have to worry about all the urban expenses.
But he did have a car.
Yeah.
He did have a car. So he needed to buy fuel.
Yeah.
He did have a cell phone, so he needed electricity and stuff.
Yeah.
So there were other particular inputs and costs also associated to this initiative, to his endeavor.
Yeah.
So that's his plan. That's his plan. your plan was unique to you.
Mm.
Like the broccoli guy's plan is unique to him. Because after trial and error, and do you see the 5-year period that I now described? After trial and error, rehabilitation, personal sweating,
finally figured something out.
All those things, he saw success after 5 years, which is in a different manifestation for him.
So running a business in Namibia is not for the weak.
And remember, he's not even a business.
Mm.
He's a one-man show.
Yeah.
He's a solo show. He just went and said, you know what, let me go and try and grow broccoli. There is no business. There is an activity
and
that makes money.
And it worked in a way.
No, but it now has worked for him. It has now led to something positive for him. Because now he does have the opportunity to supply directly to a retail market. So, in many cases, you don't have to break your head, guys. For example, like this monitoring discussion associated to Nilalek. Né? Now, Helmut, would it also not be sufficient enough? Yeah, because I can see you pulling your face because I'm now also getting that smile. That just means that the gas is out. Would it not mean, specifically in that dimension, that if we had to look at monitoring all activities on the same resource, that rather something like Nilalek would then, you know, aim to basically achieve that goal instead of going now, okay, I'm only going to target communities in traditional authority zones and only work with them. But I am not dealing with farm communities, small towns that are close to other particular rural communities who potentially can also derive impact or generate impact or enforce impact in one or other way. Because Helmut, a nice thing about this label of Nilalek, I will never get over this abbreviation. This abbreviation is literally the end of me. Namibia Integrated Landscape Approach for Enhancing Livelihoods and Environmental Governance to Eradicate Poverty. So, okay, since I've identified and I've been warned about using poverty since it's a political term.
Poverty is a political term?
Yeah.
Where is this headed?
I told you last year why the motivation was about watching out for poverty, the word poverty. Because poverty just says you are just poor. But if you say, if you look at what does Dwight have, what does Helmut not have? Or what does Helmut have, what does Dwight not have? You see deprivation.
Look, man, if
it's technically accounting that you monitor if you use the word deprivation versus the word poor, because poor just says you are poor.
Look, man, my point is, I'm broke. Calling me financially challenged is not helping. Because
is the adequate label.
Financially challenged.
Yeah.
Bottom line, you're broke, dude.
Because you know at the end of every month, Helmut, there's a spike in
you're financially unchallenged. I know that exactly. Part. All of a sudden, you know, I lose appetite for the food in my kitchen. We know the drill.
Yeah.
You know, halfway,
it's a switch on, switch off.
Switch on, switch off. Money doesn't change
it's
me.
It's a wax on, wax off.
Money doesn't change me, no. Money changes you every end of the month.
Hey, people become motivated, John.
Yeah. And actually, you know, considering the point you just made earlier about how crime statistics seems to spike from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all the way through to Sunday, literally. And then
just quiet down.
So every once a week from Thursday to Sunday, money changes every one of us and then we come back again. And
motivates people. They are motivations. But yeah, so you were still saying I'm.
There are two events that have taken place. One last year by the representatives of the Ministry of Gender in the Zambezi region, where they met with constituency councillors, where they were looking at some backyard gardening activities taking place in the region. More like they were just trying to assess the progress or the challenges that are being faced by backyard gardening type of activities in different constituencies. So So this that type of agricultural, you know, small scale agricultural initiative taking place. Now that this is coming from last year. Now this year we just learned that Omaheke from the State of the Region address recently held that they have a lot of backyard gardening activities going on in that region. Now you have all these things going on, you know, on a small scale agriculture wise, which is a good thing. We have, these events that are taking place. I mean, the backyard gardening activities in the Mahaka region, the governor is aware of them. And the backyard gardening initiatives in the Zambezi region, the constituency councillors and I'm assuming the gardeners and the Minister of Gender representatives from the central government are aware of them. But,
basically are a manifestation of Nilaleg.
Yeah.
It's not to say they are Nilaleg sponsored.
The brainchild and all
brain,
that. Yeah.
But you can see that these are things that would fall in Nilaleg's ambit.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I don't see the equivalent of that with regards to small-scale mining.
Yes. Because
it's one of those things which is just, it seems to be flying under the radar, or unless I'm not just digging the information deep enough.
Helmut, which has been my surprise as well in terms of how not just the government, but every single Namibian has approached Namibia with categories, silos, classifications, baskets that tries to split one train of thought, one school of thought from the other.
Yeah.
Helmut, you cannot come and tell me that the word environment does not include fishing. It does not include the seas and all the aquatic bodies inland of Namibia. Those are environments. Those are environments that have to be with Ministry of Environment. But for some reason, fisheries was thrown into agriculture, water and land reform. But then agriculture, water, land reform, which sounds more like a mini-me version of Ministry of Environment. Because the Ministry of Environment is the word environment in it, and it's a massive word. That word means...
Broad enough to encompass everything.
Exactly. Because why? Because that ministry is responsible for every animal, every plant, every insect, every bird, because a bird is not an animal, just so that you guys know, in terms of looking at a bird is an animal. In the kingdoms of...
What's that word? Is it the taxonomy, the classification? No.
You are still too far. You are right. Taxonomy, you are right, right? You are right. But the kingdoms that exist in Animalia... Because they had to split Animalia away from viruses, bacteria, fungi, and there's another dimension. And plants. They had to split them away from plants. So what you get in the kingdoms of Animalia, you get the mammals, you get the amphibians, you get the reptiles, you get, what's birds?
I mean, birds, just birds.
No, it is birds, like in like basic English.
Yeah.
But they use another label because birds are different from reptiles. A bird is a reptile.
Huh.
Yes, they come. They both have dinosaur linkages. Birds and reptiles. Yeah. Hence the reason also why you can't think of a crocodile as a reptile. A crocodile is a dinosaur helmet.
That's what I've been thinking about. A crocodile would be a reptile.
And a rhinoceros is a very old mammal. It's a prehistoric mammal. Meaning it's a mammal so old that it survived for so long in Africa specifically. Because if you look at a rhinoceros, it looks pretty weird.
Yeah.
It's the only mammal that has horns on this part of its face.
Yeah.
Up to the nose. A rhinoceros is a very old mammal. That's why it's a unique mammal itself. They call it's a mammal apparently that comes from the time of the mammoths and the saber-toothed tigers. That's how old the rhinoceros is. So when we look at that classification specifically that takes place, why would Ministry of Environment be responsible for the natural environment, which includes forestry, which is plant life, and then have tourism thrown in it, in its labeling?
Yeah, makes sense.
But then you go and split all the extractive measures and put them into two ministries separately from that ministry. If there was,
that would be a super ministry.
If you wanted a super ministry, if you wanted one ginormous, and I'm using here a word that is just an absolute,
two words glued up together.
You know, not just glued up, it's technically, I'm actually committing a sin by using this word in English. It's technically, that should have been our super ministry. Not Maysak Khudasa. Now, the education guys have to define what is innovation right next to education. And then I watched the TEDx yesterday where a guy was saying, a British teacher, since we are using the Cambridge system in Namibia, which is that our education system, the guy said, we shouldn't be using exams. He's a British teacher. He's a teacher, former teacher. We shouldn't be using exams as the test to basically see whether you remember the year's work. We should have, the education system should be one about, okay, you get regularly tested to see whether or not you've improved.
That's it.
That's it. Instead of testing you to see whether you can
how much you have read last night.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. Just a minute past the hour of 6. This is Homerun with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. We continue as usual, of course, until the hour of 7. But before continuing, let's take a live read. Velvicha University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences programs, a certificate for enrolled nurse, midwife / accoucheur level 6, certificate in pharmacy level 5, diploma in environmental health sciences level 6, bachelor of social work, honors, bachelor of nursing and midwifery science honors, postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8, postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety level 8, postgraduate diploma in mental health nursing level 8, master of public health and master of occupational health and safety. Apply now. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
Can I tell you a joke?
So it's not a white chair thing. Continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes social media, they do this dumb thing where they interrupt you while you're here live on air.
Yeah.
But the joke is basically, a person posts in South Africa a drink in their hand that says, on the label, it's the name of the drink, and right below it says zero alcohol. But it's a 1 liter drink. You know, it's a 1 liter bottle. And the person goes, yo, the amount of drunk I'm going to experience from this 1 liter, this whole 1 liter. And then the person who saw this post goes like, but it says zero alcohol. How are you going to get drunk?
Yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Exactly.
Meaning it's not the quantity.
Exactly. Meaning the person didn't read on the label. Guys, when we say read, here on the Home Run on Eagle FM, we literally mean go read.
Oh,
gain,
man.
Gain knowledge from reading. Gain knowledge from reading. Do you know what's another interesting thing?
The amount of drunk I'm going to get drunk from 0% alcohol.
From zero. And it literally says zero alcohol on the bottle.
Imagine spending thousands of dollars on school fees and your child is doing that.
Well, that's...
I'm sending you to the village.
Well, that's a common in, you know, Link's internal joke that we used to make there. You know, if the siblings are insulting each other.
Yeah,
you don't, you can't think. Go ask, you must bring back mother's, you must bring back mom's money. go ask back your school money. So.
The school to give you back your money. Because you didn't learn a thing.
So, another joke on the side of something similar with regarding nation building. An American teacher is going currently viral for crying. A man, he's a grown man, he's crying in his video.
Okay, that's interesting.
He's crying because the learners in his class, which are 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, cannot read four words. They cannot, you know, tell him back what they understand of two paragraphs. In English, their mother tongue in the US, homeboy was crying in his video. Which has been...
I've come across a lot of videos of teachers coming out of the Western world, especially the US, of them basically just... they're saying quite a lot of different things, but it all links into... There's something seriously wrong with the current education system. Because the learning ability is just not reflecting in a way that it should.
Yeah. Which is obviously their own doing, Hamoud, because do you know what has happened once? Which is one of
And I don't think AI is helping either. That's why a lot of countries, and let me just say social media, yeah. Combined with AI, basically. Those two are not helping.
Yeah, and why a lot of countries are trying to now put, what do you call it, like
age restriction.
Age restrictions and guardrails on social media, because that's where the AI is leaking into.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanna bring in another dimension. Obviously, that plays a major part, specifically in alleviating poverty. Because since Niederleg has the dimension of poverty in its name, as we obviously look at poverty in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
we also then have to understand what's actually going on, because. The funny thing, after I've now been sensitized, my eyes have been opened up regarding poverty being political. Because if you ask someone what is poor,
mm-hmm.
You're almost looking for a standard.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for levels. What is poor? And how much, believe you me, I won't be able to explain to you what poor is.
Yeah.
With all the knowledge I've accumulated in my 41 years here on planet Earth, I will not be able to describe to you what poor is, because all I will describe to you is a position of have and a position of have not.
Oh,
which
no.
translates in both scenarios
yeah.
to deprived and not deprived.
Look, now you are just sending me down a rabbit hole, because
go there, Helmut. We have adequate enough time.
Because now I'm thinking of it this way. When we talk about I had no idea how Western we have gone, but boy, we are way deep, because if you look at development, for example,
yeah.
how we're defining development, and like poverty, for example,
yeah.
how we're defining, when we say poverty eradication, what picture do we have in mind? In terms of infrastructure, services, and the type of lifestyle that we have in mind in reference to when we get the goal of poverty eradication now accomplished, what picture do we have in mind? And the point I'm making here is the word development itself, it's being defined in it's being dominated or influenced by a lot of Western perspective.
Mm.
Yeah, and I believe one African, I'm not sure if she's Kenyan or Nigerian, asked that question, which she just got me thinking, that when we say rich and poor, what are we talking about? To take, for example, if someone is living in the middle of the DRC forest, they have their, you know, they have their own head of cattle, and they have their own mud house.
Mm.
Is that person poor on account that they don't have a car? Exactly. Because if you come to urban areas, you'll find someone living in a brick house and they have a car and they don't own any of that. If they lose their job, the bank will come and repossess everything.
Yeah.
Now, which one of these two
are poor?
Exactly.
Yeah. How do you define the word poor?
I think that's I think that's where that's a very good place to start, because for a lot of us, as soon as you start using a smartphone, you start considering yourself rich. Except that's we haven't defined development in our own terms, have we?
No.
We have just copied what development is defined in a lot of foreign countries, and then we're just, you know what? We're going to look like them.
Actually.
Now, you have a lot of people that are drowning in debts, and they're fighting over the right to repair and a lot of questionable issues in relation to everything now is either a subscription or a lease. So ownership is being kicked out of the question in a lot of institutions in the Western world. But that's what we want here. And we are calling that wealth. Right.
It's actually, Hamoud, it fits into a conversation.
Hang on a second. Are we that stupid?
If you go look at the SDGs,
yeah,
and the explainer,
yeah,
the SDGs are, for some reason, okay, I won't go into the Millennium Challenge goals, which were just abandoned,
yeah,
because everybody could see that nobody was actually, you know, staying on track.
Yeah.
But if you look at the SDGs, the brand new template, trying to get everything right in the last 15 years before 2030, the SDGs try to define a global template, which you and I have already dissected.
Yeah.
And with that, the SDGs try to establish, okay, commonalities that, or common denominators between every country in terms of achieving zero hunger, zero poverty, because poverty is also in that thing.
Yeah.
But the Namibian economist, who's now, I don't know if he's still head of the Development Bank, John Stadler, showed up at a CSO civil society event in 2024.
Mm.
And it was about the SDGs scenario. And it was based upon a just society discussion, which was hosted by the Basic Income Grant Coalition.
Yeah.
And Stadler was standing at the back. He looked like he just came from his you know, personal cycling or jogging, because he was standing there in shorty khutarsa. You know, you wouldn't have recognized the guy, because I was sitting at the front.
Yeah.
Until we got to the Q&A. And I was now busy recording then, listening, and then he asks a question. But he makes a comment before the question. He says, in Namibia's context, it would have been swap zero hunger with zero poverty, because zero poverty was number one,
mm-hmm.
then zero hunger. Because that would have been Namibia's context.
Yeah.
Swap the two. Which ones are immediate concerns? Because you even can see...
So it shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all type of description.
Yeah. You can even see with the state of the region addresses,
yeah.
even with this Nila Lake thing, there definitely will be an aspect of community gardening also anticipated there.
Yeah.
But if you look at the concern for rural communities across Namibia, for disenfranchised people, I will now also use that word, or deprived people across urban settlements in Namibia, is you see... lack of access to food and lack of access to nutrition and lack of access to money to get to food in the shops.
Yeah.
And Stadler said it very well. He said, in Namibia's case, you would have to swap zero hunger with zero poverty, because you first need to feed the person.
Yeah.
You will first need to feed the person.
Before you pull them out of poverty.
Yeah. And once again, we have to ask the question of what is poverty? Who came up with this label? Because if you see deprivation, which mm-hmm. is the example you also just now, you know, elegantly illustrated, then you continuously just see deprivation, Samuel. You can't see the word poverty.
Yeah, but, you know, even the word deprivation itself now, in reference to my example, brings all kinds of questions, because if you find someone, take for example, someone that's just, you know, content with what they have built for their community in the, you know, take, you know, so, you know, some native who is not very urbanized.
Yeah,
you are just, it's just you and your family and your, you know, your hunter-gathering, almost like a nomadic lifestyle in the middle of the, you know, Namibian large landmass. So, the question that comes, if I describe your condition as poor, or you know, you'd be asking me, okay, I have my family, I have my health, I have my food, you know, it was a wonderful hunting day today. If you're calling me poor, what does that mean?
Mm.
Yeah, because I mean, you'd have a lot of explaining to do with you know, with regards to what do you mean by I'm poor? Because according to me, I have everything right here. Now, if you say deprivation, for example, they're going to ask you the exact same thing. I have my family. The water is right there. I can get it for free. Mother Nature provided.
Mm.
Then, there's my madhouse, which I don't, by the way, I don't owe the bank a dime or anyone a dime.
Yeah. I don't need electricity because I've got firewood,
there's firewood and everything.
And I'm sustainably living off it.
What am I deprived of?
Yeah.
It would be a very interesting discussion to have, which is why it also now, this is why I actually like Bhutan.
Do you know who I like?
Who is that?
Not like a tourist destination.
Yeah.
I'm talking about where your needs are sorted.
Mm-hmm.
I had a look once again, or somehow, somewhere, Austria popped up on, you know, my YouTube feed once again.
Yeah.
I'm starting to like Austria a lot more. Austria is a baby version of Germany. In the sense, okay, they're currently like 5 or 6 or 7 million people. But the baby version I'm talking about is the interventions into daily life to make your life as an Austrian.
Yeah.
As easy peasy lemon squeezy as possible.
Yeah. That's also good for Germany.
Which is Germany,
yeah.
Basically.
It's also very good for Germany. The easier life is in Austria, the less likely painters are going to move.
Failed painters are to be,
you know, you don't want
to be cultivated.
Yeah, you don't want to cultivate painters. You don't want painters moving through.
No. I think there is an AfD linkage once again. There was a guy.
Look, the problem with Germany is, if another painter goes loose again in Austria,
they find themselves
in Germany. Poland is also caught in the crossfire. Now you see the problem.
And Poland always has like.
I swear, Poland is always caught in the crossfire. Yeah. Any European, a general that goes nuts and wants to invade a country, their first go-to country is Poland. Most likely going to be Poland.
For some reason, Poland is always just. I'm sorry if you're Polish. I'm really sorry.
There's this video of a German Shepherd barking, and someone edited the barking sound with someone speaking German.
Mm.
That when someone pisses off your German Shepherd, so.
No, they should have had Dobermans.
They should have had
Dobermans. Because a shepherd dog.
Look, man, it's the comment section that killed me because some guy wrote that, watch out. He could be planning to invade Poland.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's only us humans that would say stupid things like that.
Look, the thing about social media is wherever I find a funny video, I know that the comment section is like 10 times funnier.
Will definitely be on fire, the comment section.
So we don't want, we're not looking forward to any, painters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're finding Austria more interesting.
I'm finding Austria a lot more interesting in that scenario. Then there's obviously, for example, Uruguay. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize Uruguay because I also watched, there's a channel I also follow, It's the Australian one or the American one, but I think it's the American one that explained it, because they also explained how socialism, the best scenario of a socialist economy, works. And Uruguay seems to be that economy.
Seems to be doing just fine.
Because Uruguay is not like Namibia. And I explained it just now to Matthias while we were sitting outside, before we started with the program. I explained in the conversation with Matthias just now, before we started with the show, I explained to Matthias, how do you have a country like Uruguay who had a president like José Mujica? If you guys don't know who Mujica was the guy who didn't accept his presidential salary.
Mm-hmm.
He drove to the presidential palace in his wife's VW.
Beetle.
He lived on his wife's farm with his wife. So that means his wife was technically the trust fund baby between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was also a political prisoner in the 80s. Like that example you explained between and that I also explained about the Congo crisis. You explained about Kenya's origins in terms of its independence.
Yeah, two guys fighting for independence together, and now one of them is jailing the other.
Now here's a scenario.
Yeah.
In both scenarios of the African context,
like
the Congo crisis, the Kenyan scenario.
Yeah.
All these guys were trying to achieve as opposition political parties to each other.
Yeah.
They were trying to achieve independence and then co-governance of a newly independent African country.
Yeah.
What happened with Mujica was an opposition party leader who was imprisoned as a political prisoner by the guy who later on became Uruguay's president in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He was imprisoned by this guy, brutally tortured in the prison, because the 80s... The 80s are deemed as the world's most violent period. Without it,
really?
No. Without talking about wars.
Uh-huh, okay.
But the social developments culminated in a lot of political instability, for example, in South America, parts of Africa. And then it also culminated, because, for example, Africa in the 80s, it was the precursor to what happened in Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
The Somalia Civil War. And then it was obviously the dimensions of, the influences, that you and I know what the CIA had there in South America.
Mm-hmm.
And Uruguay was not immune to those developments. The screen. So Uruguay was not immune. And political upheaval was heavy in the 80s as well. So Mujica was imprisoned, became a political prisoner. Homeboy was tortured in the prison and stuff like that. He had like a permanent limp.
Damage.
Yeah, because of the torture.
Jeez.
And then when he was released in the 90s, it was somewhere in the 90s, he then stood to challenge to become president of Uruguay. And he and the guy that imprisoned him actually became friends. The guy that was the former president.
He really was a nice guy.
And Mujica's whole perspective as an individual was not about... because he didn't must wear suits. He wore almost that leather jacket that he had for like thousands of years, a pair of jeans and a pair of shoes, like fellies, and a shirt. And then he drove the Beetle all the time to the capital, Montevideo.
Without a convoy, by the way.
Without a convoy.
And he died of natural causes.
Yeah. On his wife's farm.
Mm-hmm.
Must be nice to have a wife like that. Maybe I should also find a wife like that.
With a farm?
Yeah. I just do that. I just have the driver's license. You see how much that's the kind of life you should aspire for. But anyway, so
right. Let's start with the biggest problem here.
Where?
For you and I and everyone interested in this
dimension. Conversation topic.
Poverty eradication strategy.
First things first, how much you use the word poverty again?
Okay.
You have to say deprivation strategy.
That makes it
deprivation
even
better. Deprivation alleviation strategy.
Yeah, it makes it even very diplomatic.
No, it sounds like a sales strategy, because I worked in advertising. It's superb because it's temporary. Yeah. You just don't know when it gets alleviated. it's there temporarily.
Oh, man.
But you just don't know when.
For one, where do you meet them?
Here's the thing, which we were taught in specifically like in business or in the actual economy was always say it's in the pipeline. It's a work in progress. I can't clearly tell you where to find them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also don't know, but it's a work in progress. It's in the pipeline, Helmut.
Look, I think it's much easier to hit on someone that is driving a Benz than a Land Cruiser. With a hey,
and then you find out the person has debts the size of Waterberg.
Yeah, mostly they're most likely going to.
And then you have to source that. Then you have to service the debts because you're the husband most in uh-huh. community of properties.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
So, Amut, once again, what's the strategy? Use my words. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, we're on top of these things. No, they're not. They are way behind.
We have no plan.
Look, I believe, okay, I find, this is where I find politics now a little too confusing because I don't think, as much as I don't like politicians, more like cooking up stuff that is very unrealistic, just don't make it too unrealistic, is that I just don't picture the alternative working out for politicians. Can you imagine someone running for office and they say, you know, they're running for office by telling the truth. And they just take the podium and you're like, you know what? The money I don't have. I know your needs developmental wise, whether it's school, health, agriculture, you name it, industrialization, you name it. I know those needs. I want to be in that office. I promise to figure it out. Where the money is going to come from, I have no idea. The best we can, the money that I'm going to use, actually, I have an idea. The money that we're going to use to solve all these issues is going to come from central government.
But, and there's nothing wrong with central government doing that.
Yeah, the central government, actually, that's what the money is for.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to come from central government. So basically, it's your money that I'm going to use to alleviate your issues.
Yeah.
So I'll just be some kind of a mediator of some sort, governance-wise.
Do you know that there's a rumor? I don't know if it's
true. I feel like that's just too much to explain. So I understand to some degree why they just take the podium and go like, I will create employment. Okay. Which is, it's just a flat-out lie. What? Really?
Okay.
Dude, let's face it. You are looking for a job.
Yeah.
We have all seen the unemployment statistics. You are broke. And you are looking for a job.
Helmut, the way you say broke. it sometimes feels like a stab in the heart. You're broke.
You're broke, dude. Let's face it. And you're looking for
someone
a job.
Is arguing with you. You're broke.
And you want us to vote for you so you can have broke. A job. So this campaign is to you what a job interview is to me when I'm looking broke. For yeah, so
we are all broke.
We're all broke. So I will help you out, but broke out.
Yeah.
I will help you out. I'll vote for you so you can get a job. At least one of us is paying taxes. all I'm saying is the truth is it's a little tricky.
It definitely won't set you free.
No, it won't. The irony is the man that said those words was nailed to the cross. Definitely, that you like. Look,
it will not set you free.
Okay,
you will stay broke. Definitely.
Every guy, let me just say, every straight guy I know, who is smart enough, understands that the best way to die a virgin is to tell the truth. And
that does not seem to be my philosophy. Okay, but I choose to keep quiet.
Because the truth is either going to get you slapped or some denied. Wine in your face.
Or denied.
Or, rejection, promax, or any of this, but the positive.
Yeah, the actual goal that you set out to achieve.
You're going to get staked big time if you're together with the truth.
Where are you approaching ladies? Where do you approach them?
I don't approach
them at bars. I really don't.
I don't do bars too.
I really don't, because it's either there's a boyfriend or there's a guy who claims to be the boyfriend, and then he is there playing stalker bodyguard mannerisms. Moment you approach her, then all you see is all you remember is that you waking up. Literally Monday morning in Karatura Hospital in the emergency ward,
because you got, you know, you got
panel beaten.
Oh yeah, you know. Besides panel beaten, but you got literally ragdolled from somewhere else, which you didn't expect, because you didn't see.
Look, man, when I decide to go out, look, I'm terrible at multitasking. So when I decide that, okay, you know, tonight I'm just gonna go out and have a beer too, I'm literally there for a beer too. That's why more often been through a situation where I wake up in the morning, it's like, what that girl was saying was that a come hither message? Because I have no idea. 5 years down the line, they are telling you, yeah, but I was hitting on you. Really?
That 5 years later.
My goodness. 5 years. I'm calling my grandma because this is personal.
5 years later. Yeah, you ladies must also work on your communication skills. Please, we can't smell hints.
But one thing I always say, you know, joke about with my lady friends is that we don't need hints. We need subtitles. Put it out
in a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, in PowerPoint presentation.
With a pointer.
Because I know that if I just if I misread you, I'm gonna end up behind bars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do not want to be there. Commercial break, and I promise to be serious on the other side of the break.
We all save at USave. This week's specials are any 2 2-litre Pepsi, Miranda, or Mountain Dew soft drink, just $30 million, 100 grams Frisco granules, instant coffee at $28.99, 1 litre long life clover milk, only $22.99, pay just $20 for 8 or 100 cups clover dairy snacks, 500 grams yummy polony at $26.99. You save, your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Welcome back. So, can we just use the 30 minutes to talk about one of my favorite discussions that took place in this this engagement? Mm-hmm. That is not just you have information gathering that seems to be very techy, because they don't have paperwork. They just have they are more techy than papers in their information gathering.
Which is actually slightly weird, Hamoud, because I mean, I know that even land use planning or land management departments at universities have a document that they go around and measure.
Yeah.
And then they fill in what needs to be done, because then they translate that later on into a physical or into a digital platform that then does the monitoring stuff and allows them then to do data analysis and report evaluations and stuff like that. So it is a bit weird that you're now saying, no, it's all paperless, but you've got to measure the 3 conventions and their impacts and how they manifest over 65,000 participants.
Yeah.
How can you go paperless?
I know there are papers involved to some degree.
Yes.
The reason why I pointed that out is because I want to rope in again the NSA and a lot of different all the ministries and SOEs in terms of information compiling, information and information gathering processing producing the result that that leads to reports that you and I need. And actually loves. Mm. So if you have an academic institution in Namibia that is that has a significant part of its information gathering which is electronized, is that true for all SOEs? Why is that not true for all SOEs and ministries to just centralize all the information, to just send all the information that's needed to all the respective offices that compile the reports at the end of the day, like the NSA?
Well, here's the thing about that. Have you ever seen how limiting the NSA reports are? When I say limiting, let's say the CPI reporting, the one that came out earlier this week, I think yesterday or the day before, the Consumer Price Index, which basically measures inflations. So the CPI would obviously be based from accessible desktop research resources, which would be the central bank's particular announcements the other day, and the planned shifts. And then they would then go and look at every, you know, every food stuff that you buy daily.
Yeah.
Now, it might be things I buy and things you don't buy. Yeah. It might be things you buy and I don't buy.
Yeah.
But they try to benchmark this food basket dimension to every Namibian, which is also misleading. I'll be honest with you. It's a misleading reality. Now, it's not the NSA's fault. The NSA uses a tool that is a tool used by the World Bank, by the IMF, by the leading, public economic measuring institutions across the world. They all use a CPI. But
so we're just copying and pasting.
Yes, but a CPI is misleading, Helmut. It is misleading. Because
so there are measuring standards that are used in a lot of developed countries that we are crossing our fingers and hoping is going to do the same here in terms of putting out clear information as to how the money is moving in the country.
But here's the thing. The CPI helps a retailer, the owner of a business. The CPI doesn't help you.
That brings us to that piece of legislation that seems to be benefiting the financial institutions more than the individuals they provide the service to.
Which actually translates into his legislation that's CRAN's legislation. I thought it was Bank of Namibia's legislation and the commercial banks, the Electronic Transactions Act. It's CRAN's law.
Okay, so then you are talking about ways of solving problems that are institutional based rather than, that priority. Yeah,
than the reality based.
Exactly. They are prioritizing the institutions rather than the consumers.
The society.
Yeah.
Hence the reason why I kept saying at the start of this year and at the end of last year, Namibia has to come up with a plan somehow to pivot the economy away from industry sectoral based. To what does this economy mean for every Namibian?
Yeah.
Now, economies that I don't know much of, but I've heard hints of it. I mean, at one stage, Omulemba also cited it back in 2022 or 2023 when I was still doing the business and economic segment when the oil was discovered, where, for example, he cited there that if you're a citizen of the UAE, you get a basic income grant from the government because of the oil proceeds that they sell. Now, whether you are in Austria, whether you are in the UAE, whether you are in Uruguay, there are burdens that your government has to remove.
Yeah.
All three of them, two of them are based upon democratic principles, meaning the governments of Austria and Uruguay, and UAE is a kingdom.
Yeah.
So we have to ask questions in terms of what did those three separate economies do to make sure that actual beneficiation, poverty alleviation, which is deprivation alleviation, how did that manifest? Oh, UAE stuck money in people's pockets and monthly. That's why, do you know, Helmut, there's a research paper, and you can go look for this research paper online. There's research papers that economists have done about the longevity of countries who are oil producers from the earnings of oil. What happens to their economies and their labor forces? And I was shown one about the problem for the UAE, for Kuwait, for Oman, for Saudi Arabia, for Qatar and Bahrain, is that if the whole world moves away from oil, you know, the just energy transition, what then happens to those economies? Because they are the most reason for the petrodollar.
Yeah.
And what happens to their everyday way of life, for the everyday, citizen in those countries? The one guy did a research paper on why are there so many foreigners in Dubai or in the UAE? You know, where are their people? You know, if you look at South Africa's argument with March and March, Operation Dudula Khudersa, it was based upon
the foreigners are taking our jobs. Versus, I don't have an issue with foreigners in my economy.
Yeah, please come.
You must just be here legally, as a belief.
Yeah.
Not that comment of the other day that you guys called my supervisor who dropped me a WhatsApp and said, yeah, I'm apparently sounding xenophobic. No, you should be here legally. Because if I have to prove that I have to get legally to, let's say, to Germany or to Russia, I can't go and break another country's laws, which technically shows a great misleading dimension in terms of how many people think in society. A lot of you think criminality is a way to achieve, is an end. No? Is a means to your end. You will commit any crime for the sake of just doing whatever you feel you want to do without thinking about the consequences. So that's problematic. And yes, I'm preaching so that you know. So a scenario like that, Helmut, which the researcher then went into that UAE, you know, Middle East context in asking, why don't the Dubai, you know, the Emiratis, why don't they, the locals, why don't they occupy all the jobs? You know, like from low-end paying jobs to the high-end paying jobs, from the entry-level to the executive and strategic jobs in the economy. And the researcher realized that the people don't want to do the jobs.
I think that's that becomes very apparent in a lot of developed countries. The more a country develops, the more a lot of its people shy away from a lot of what it describes as menial jobs, like your cleaner, for example, and a lot of hospitality related, you know, related jobs. They just want to do, you know, like just a high level, mostly blue collar type of jobs.
The best example that I heard of, besides reality punching you, giving you an ugly bloody nose, I say bloodied nose, was an example my sister used to use when she lived in Johannesburg, of a very famous South African TV presenter, a news presenter, who got a contract in the 2000s to go and work for BBC or Sky News in the UK. Now, that was one of the opportunities that South Africa's economy allows for.
Yeah.
You know, you have a gateway through the South African economy to work any place in the world. Namibia's economy is not like that. I have to stress this. Namibia's economy is not like that, which has been one of the frustrations for us Namibians, because the bigger concern is that people will even ask you, like you and I have realized on gaming internationally, is like, where are you from? Namibia. Libya. Namibia. Namibia. No, Namibia. Oh, Namibia. Africa. Yes. Where? You know, people don't know us, I'll be honest, but everybody knows South Africa. Now, the concern from that kind of a thinking, which is a very basic illustration I'm showing you, that lady was offered a contract out of the UK from South Africa. She went, started working, and then, because she's a TV presenter, the local British audience didn't like her English pronunciation.
I can imagine.
Now, you are bringing a South African where the South African audience is used to that accent.
Yeah.
You're taking a South African to the UK. And you're not even putting the person on BBC International. You're putting the person on the local BBC channels. Nah, to deal with the local British audience. She lost her contract. She was fired. She lost her contract on something as, which is technically a racist principle. It's a racist principle, let's be honest, because you are technically discriminating against someone based upon how they pronounce English.
Certain words, yeah.
Yeah. No, English, how they pronounce English. So she got fired, and the story was broken in South Africa at that stage in the early 2000s that this prominent TV star, media personality is working as a retail packer in London.
Jeez.
Now, I'm going to ask you the question. Yes, the UK economy at that stage was so open, anyone can participate, because remember, this is before, way before Brexit.
Yeah.
Today,
the architects and the masterminds of Brexit refuse to acknowledge that their own British citizens refuse to do to be the refuse removers, the guys that work the rubbish truck.
Yeah.
They don't want to do those jobs. They don't want to work in bars. They don't want to work in the retail shops. They don't want to work in, you know, like the everyday entry-level jobs, jobs that you can even give to teenagers, for example. Those, and there's obviously categories of those jobs because in some cases you would need a license. For example, working with a rubbish truck, one of you has to be the driver and the driver needs to have a code C. What's a truck license? Code C, ne?
Yeah, must be. Yeah. Well, a code C or higher.
Yeah. You must have a code C license, ne? And you must have a you must have an international license if you're an international person, a license recognized by the British authorities. So you have scenarios like that. Or there are factories and you need labor for the factories because the locals don't want to work in those factories.
Mm-hmm.
Those are realities that exist, which is realities that were even seen in a GCC country, an oil producing petrol dollar supporting country. The locals don't want to do the jobs. They don't want to work in the malls. They don't want to work in the local retail shop. They don't want to because earning the oil money is nice. We take an ad break, guys. We come back afterwards.
Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, my. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a YouSave up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. YouSave. Where else?
Welcome back, and we continue. We have 14 minutes left to go, so we're still on social grants and basically, you know, more like social safety nets and how it's how it, you know, a country's development seems to impact the you know, the more it implements a certain social safety nets, a lot of citizens of that particular country seems to like shy away from a lot of jobs. They become very picky when it comes to the type of jobs that they're willing to do.
Yeah.
And this is where you see a lot of you know, immigrations now taking place.
Yeah.
That's where you see a lot of countries opening up their borders, saying, oh, you know what, we need maybe, you know, this number of people in this type of industry. And I believe a lot of countries in Europe, like Germany, are already doing that, especially when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look, if you look at the Brexit guys, one thing that I found very fascinating about politicians was who is this? Boris Johnson was interviewed. He appeared on BBC where he was asked one of the he was
was it the interview of this year?
Yeah, it was the one for this year. Yeah, and one of the discussion they I'm not sure if that was the primary discussion they had, but the discussion ended up taking the direction of Brexit.
Mm.
Boris Johnson, with a straight face, said, "We didn't have a plan of what to do after Brexit." And that's when I couldn't help but think, okay, first of all, I appreciate the honesty. Second of all, citizens have got to listen beyond the rhetoric coming out of politicians, because for 90% of the time, these guys were spearheading the whole thing. They even brought out statistics on the economic advantages that their country would, that their countries would benefit after Brexit. And now Brexit came and they were just looking at economic negativity after economic negativity, and you appear years after you
wreaked havoc,
wrecked the country's economy, literally, with your and you're saying you didn't have a plan, and he look, he made it worse by saying we didn't think it was our job to come up with a plan. I'm like, okay, you know what? Again, I like the honesty, but this is where citizens, this is not the time for I'm not into politics, because believe me, you can imagine you have a lot of people that basically rallied behind that. You don't have to imagine, because they were a lot of people that rallied behind every politician that was pro Brexit. They rallied behind them without asking a very simple question. What is the plan B if this and this happen? Because, coming up with plan A, that's not enough. You need fallback plans, type of contingency plans. If one doesn't work, what's your next plan? And because right now, that's where they find themselves. There are a lot of economic negativities that came out of Brexit, and you have public official that's going to national media for them and going, we didn't come up with a plan because we didn't think it was our job. I'm like, eish.
Do you know what is the most embarrassing thing specifically of the template of
Brexit
was how the media was used to sell Brexit. And that's why we have to understand, even in like modern Namibia,
mm-hmm.
the power that we as the media also occupy. Now, one of the saddest things was an interview I saw back in last month where an economist had to tell a senior journalist.
Yes.
I don't know if it was the New York Times, because I'm trying to look for the interview now, but the lady refused
mm-hmm.
because it never crossed her mind that she's working class. So it was a comment.
Really?
It's a question she asked, and the economist threw it back to her, the guy that she was interviewing, and he threw it back to her and he said, "You are working class as well." And she asked him, how? Because she asked the question sort of like to antagonize him, but he showed her the realities of her own world as well, without knowing her. He said, "Do you wake up every morning to come to work?" She said, "Yes, you're working class. Do you have to work for a salary? Or do you have XYZ particular things taken?" She said, "No, I have a salary." And he said, "You're working class." And it was in a dimension whereby you can see this in like profound scenarios, even, for example, like with, if I can say, like, people who are not the business owners of a company, but they are like just high-paid executives of a company.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they seem to lose touch with reality that they are also employee.
Because the basic descriptive denominator you need is, does this person wake up every morning to come to an activity that is not born out of their personal investment choices, meaning they didn't put money down, they didn't build it up from the
ground. They're basically not a shareholder. They don't own
it in any scenario. Yeah. They come and they earn compensation for the time that they invest in that activity. And if you can prove it, you're working class.
So you have some execs that are so high paid, they seem to have forgotten that they
are working class. Yes.
If you're a journalist and someone has to explain that to you, boy, that's embarrassing.
That is super. And I felt it from Vantuk, ne? All the way.
And this is not on radio, this is on TV.
No, it was a pod. That's why I'm trying to find this thing. It was a podcast thing.
Bottom line, there are cameras pointed at you when you are being schooled that you are a working class genius.
They didn't want to realize. The whole basis was this, that the interview was supposed to be based upon dealing with inequality. And I don't know if it was...
Jeez.
I don't know if it was Varoufakis or what's his name? What's the guy's name that I follow? Gary Stevenson. But people didn't want to recognize, or the person interviewing came with a predisposition. They came with an understanding and a position pre-installed into an interview, and their discussion, and you can see, and I don't know, understand why these journalists exist in the world. They came to argue instead of, you know, extracting more information.
Mm-hmm.
They came to look for a reaction instead of having a conversation. You know, if let's, for example, say that interview that you and I are planning about migrant labor in the African context.
Yeah.
I'm not going there to now interrogate, as if I'm the police, someone who I will rely on for their experiences in life.
Yeah.
Now, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, much of Western mainstream media seems to tailor their questions in trying to come up with a gotcha moment.
Yeah, the gotcha. The gotcha question. You know, it's a curveball. You can see that the respondent is comfortable with the questions. And then a question flies in like this.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what I've... There were a bunch of people that used to send me questions like that, specifically when during President Geingob's COVID briefings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I could see these were gotcha questions.
Okay, but is that about informing someone, or is that about informing people, or sensationalizing?
Yeah, and that's
what comes out of it.
And that's why I also realized how dangerous politicians are in Namibia. Even during that period of the COVID pandemic, politicians were willing to use, politicians from opposition parties or whether they're from the same party, were willing to use the media to throw jabs at each other. And you've got to ask this particular question primarily, Hamoud, because in some cases, let's be honest, there are mean people in this world.
Yeah.
They're not mean because there's any cash incentive. They are mean because they are just mean. You saw, the things are not working. But it also doesn't mean, in terms of information, in terms of dealing with people, that every Namibian out there shouldn't approach you as a fellow Namibian in terms of conversation. But 5 years is long enough for me, Hamoud, to see the kind of Namibians we have,
mm-hmm.
in terms of how they wish to work with each other and how not to work with each other. The best examples not to work with each other. There's now, once again, some political furor going up about politicians between each other, throwing mud at each other, taking each other to court. Now a judge went and told one of those said particular parties to the mudslinging activities, you better apologize to me or else. And we are seeing more and more of, in every 5 year span, how the politicians, the new opposition politicians, come and waste time on things that are not of national importance. I'll say it to now, Hamoud. I don't care about your bank balance.
Yeah.
I don't care about your bank balance. I hope you don't care about my bank balance. The defining denominator we currently have in front of us, when we all have to wait patiently for it, is how, for example, all the green industries are going to achieve the industrialization goals for Namibia.
Yeah.
Because we've got to see in the next 5 years since last year whether or not President Nandi Ndaitwa will actually allow and her government will actually champion greener industrialization. A fellow journalist that I had a conversation with at that information as a human right discussion afterwards, she channeled, that's why the National Planning Commission is in charge of it. And I was like, from the track record of the NPC, National Planning doesn't have the best record on in public about actually championing national development.
South Korea presentation. 2 minutes left to the hour of 7. Now, that's just wanted to throw that one. I mean, South Korea presentation, that could have been a Zoom meeting. But
that could have been an email, Almut.
Yeah, right.
That could have been an email.
No one could have read it. They just wanted
that
to...
could have been a workshop for two people on a Zoom call, and then go and communicate that with the National Planning Commission's people.
The problem with Zoom is it doesn't have an all-you-can-eat buffet. It doesn't have S&T.
There's no hotel.
Exactly.
There's no different culture to experience.
Fly.
You can't see a factory through the screen properly.
Yeah. I mean, they can send you, you know. You know what? It's Friday, so I wish I could have a long conclusion, but nah. Till Sunday.
On my side, guys, let's see each other again on Sunday as well. Early in the morning, bright and early, obviously, with my Sunday morning take. And stay tuned for the rest of the programming after the break, guys.